And joining us on the podcast this week is an actor that we grew up loving, Max Gale Jr., who is an Emmy-nominated actor, director, and writer from Detroit, Michigan, who has appeared in hundreds of television shows and movies, including Mad Men, Criminal Minds, NCIS, Days of Our Lives, Trapper John M.D., Matlock, Psych, Dexter, Longmire, and the Mr. T vehicle DC Cab. He is probably best known, certainly best well. He's certainly best known for his role as Detective Stan Wojo Wojohowicz, spelled just like it sounds, on the classic sitcom Barney Miller, which can be seen on Antenna TV, and he can presently be seen on General Hospital, where he won a Daytime Emmy Award in 2019 for his role as Mike Corbin. Please welcome Max Gale Jr.
When it gets left out of the conversation, we get into all this deep doo-doo we're dealing with now. That's my feeling.
We're all connected to each other.
And then the other thing I want to say is that I actually did drop out for a time. I dropped out when I got married and we had a fit, and then we found out my wife had cancer. And I dropped out for about 5 years, pretty much totally, just to deal with that and being a single mom for a few years. And then I remarried and I went back and I did a show with the Frank Zappa's two oldest kids. So I loved that family. And I, you know, but it was maybe too soon for me, or I was too, you know, whatever. I found myself, I had a new wife and a new baby and a new TV show, and I was not going to do anything where maybe I missed seeing what was going on with my wife the first time around. I'm not going to. And that kind of kicked me out of the whole thing. And for a while, I got much more involved in the social and environmental justice possibilities with the internet. You know, that was like going into the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And Wild West. That, you know, we can have, you know, this people can talk all around the world and everything. We didn't foresee it being kind of taken over by polarization and by, you know, we didn't see Google and Facebook and all these things quite emerging in this way and being where we are. But that was a great, you know, vision until I finally, you know, being ahead of your time is not really different from being wrong.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out how to, you know, I'd kind of been through with a terminal illness and then all of that. I had to go to work and my appetite came back and I've been working on along. So, you know, just to share that journey since we're talking.
Yeah, there. Thank you for doing that.
I would love to hear actually all this come back about you guys and what you're up to and stuff. So could you each give me a little something out of this or you'd like to share with me before we go, or do we have to cut it off?
No,
right,
we can go. Go ahead, Steph.
No, why am I going first?
Because you're a lady and I'm letting the lady go first.
Just like, why am I doing the podcast with these two jerks?
Well, I'll start.
Yeah.
And then you guys can follow since I'm the radio professional.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I have been one of those kids. I started out as a kid who consumed media, single mother, and the TV was the babysitter. So it was all the sitcoms, a lot of the dramas. Some of the stuff was too heady for me, but I was born in 1970. And as soon as I discovered a radio, I liked that hiss, especially on the AM. So every night I went to bed listening to talk, and I didn't even care what they were talking about. I just liked that. And So it drew me to radio. And my whole life, all I've ever wanted to do was be on the radio, and that's what I do now. I work on a daily talk show where we examine the American ridiculousness that's going on, especially. We don't pull our punches. But creating the podcast to me was an important thing because I think that the Gen X generation has something special, and I can explain that by saying this. When I heard that bass line, boom, 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 that meant you got to go to bed. Unless I was staying with my grandparents. My mother had a couple different jobs. She worked 2-3 jobs a day, so I would stay with her parents. And my grandfather knew I liked Barney Miller, so he would sit up in the living room and watch it with me. And
cool.
But when I hear that bass line, and I've heard it 100 times because I've just edited for the show, it brings back memories of being in their house and the smells and the dog and how I felt. And that's kind of how my memory works. I think in those ways. And then, you know, when The important thing that I want to say about this is that Barney Miller is a show, and a lot of shows from the 70s, Alice, Mary Tyler Moore, things that were huge, they bridge generations, whether it's the World War II generation who they had, were going into retirement, and these shows were for them, the baby boomers who were really taking over the country and, again, exploring social issues and the environment and everything, and the Native American, the Indian movement. We got to experience all of that. All of it. And also the transition into what we are today. And, you know, and I'm an old man. I'm almost 50. I'm ready for AARP. but that's, it's, this is so important to me, the history of our culture and the pop culture and how everything turned and started going toward the better. And, you know, there've been ups and downs, but, you know, speaking to you today is like speaking to, a very important part of my childhood. So I wanted to thank you.
Yeah, and I say, you know, Barney Miller's still showing on Antenna TV today, and I think it still holds up. I mean, some of the references may be dated, but the comedy and the writing and the acting all just are perfect and still are hold up and are funny today.
Yep.
Yeah, to Tim's point, I would say that my parents, they had a very tumultuous relationships, so home life was not great, and then also being the minority in school was also not the best not the best time, I have to admit. My safe place was at my step grandparents' house after school, watching Barney Miller, watching Taxi, watching all of these shows. That's when I felt like everything was going to be okay, and so that's why I guess my whole life I've always ran to television for comfort and movies and things like that. But it meant a lot to me when I was a kid, and even when I had to massage my step-grandmother's feet with Avon Skin So Soft.
All right, we weren't expecting that.
while we watched Barney Miller, which was, you know, it still was a good time, but I, like Tim said, it meant a lot to me, and that's my whole life. I've always been completely obsessed with pop culture and things like that, anything that's positive for the most part.
And you and Hal still stay in touch?
You know, yes. I mean, it's not like a regular, I call him every few weeks, but we stay in touch. And we recently, a few years ago, I did one of these things that I'd always said no to, but I got one of these autograph shows back in New Jersey. One of the bigger ones, I guess, and somebody who kept staying on me, and I said, no, I'm going to end up sitting over in the corner, you know, it just seemed strange, you know. I was actually a pretty good experience, because the people that go there, they go there intentionally, you know, and they have something they want to share. It's not like you just happen to be sitting in that restaurant. So in that moment, you know, they're your biggest fan, and I really need, you know, and you know, anyway, it's so, so I ended up talking to Hal about it, and he came along. So just about, I guess a couple of months ago now, we spent a few days together back there in New Jersey, just, you know, signing pictures and taking pictures and hanging out with each other. And then I got to see his family, who are all grown now, but they were his teenagers back when. So, you know, there's nobody else really around. I mean,
hey, you guys got to take care of yourselves. And the last of the guard there for the Barney Miller.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. This is a podcast, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are you finding that experience? Because I'm looking at it. I get that there are my daughter, India, who lives down in Austin, has almost 3-year-old twin girls. Now, but she listens to some really great podcasts. My son's into Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. But I see that it's a form that, you know, has a lot of range in it. It's got a video part if you want to be doing that, you know, and I'm wondering how you're finding this platform you're working with and all of that, because I'm going to roll on here a little bit longer. In 1980, when portable video was just showing up, it was kind of like the New Deal for the local TV stations to have our portable video is here from, you know, there was no satellite yet or anything. And the half-inch stuff was just being seeded out to the in the profession, so they weren't in the stores yet, but they were the camera people. And I was experiencing being, you know, doing Barney Miller, and I got very involved with kind of connecting the Indian movement up with the No Nukes movement back at that time. It was Musicians United for Safe Energy. It was Bonnie Raitt and Jackson Browne and Crosby, Stills and Nash, and they were doing concerts to, you know, raise at least some awareness of what was going on with nuclear energy and risks that were being taken and stuff. And there was a whole part of that that was on reservations with uranium mining and the what was left over with the mill tailings and stuff. So that was going on in my life at that time, and that involved doing doing a number of concerts with some my Indian friend Charlie Hill, who's a comedian, and Floyd Westerman, who was Native American singer-songwriter, who had an acting career eventually. He was the old chief in Dances with Wolves, if you ever saw that.
Oh, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know.
But Floyd was really known and loved around the world, really, with indigenous people, and certainly in the hemisphere and in North America. And it just, you know, I just knew there was a story there that wanted to tell itself. And when video showed up, so throughout 1980, we were just traveling and working with, you know, documentary filmmakers who all of a sudden, it wasn't like I can only afford this much 16 millimeter film and to get it developed. So I got to do the interview. I've only got this much, you know, it freed up. You could shoot everything, you know. It took a while to learn. Now you got to watch it all, so you might want to not shoot. But anyway, so we were traveling around, and I had this conversation going on with the network about a kind of a docu-musical type show that would be, if there, you know, I didn't, you know, like maybe a Saturday Night Live version of Charles Kuralt.
Right.
You know, in the sense that, you know, a different generation, a different look, a more, you know, of what's actually going on in the world. And you know, that was when the hostage crisis was going on with Iran. And what we're seeing that's all still, you know.
I remember that well.
The aftermath many years later. But that, so that spot that they couldn't do anything with opposite Johnny Carson that I was pitching them on, all of a sudden that was their hit show at Nightline, you know, and what I was doing ended up way, way more radical than the network. You know, the country was kind of moving to the right and, you know, electing Ronald Reagan and, you know, who was talking about, and our ancestors came to these vast unpopulated lands, you know, and nobody's going, oh, wait a minute. So the time shifted, and then my own life took me, you know, where it did. But I, that was, I had all these tapes from a whole lot of people, you know, collaborating in a whole lot of wonderful situations, a whole lot of understanding that was in them. And so that's what led me into the kind of digital realm, because I was looking for, and when it got to be the early 90s, and the show I was describing before with Frank Zappa's Two Oldest Kids, it was, you know, television had changed. The Fox network was now the new urban network. So all the black shows were mostly produced by non-black people, but, you know, and that was over there, and the rest of TV had gotten pretty white and kind of like not dealing with things like TV did in the 70s.
Yeah, Norman Lear tried to make all that happen, and he did. And then what happened in the 80s? Well, it was just, you know, goofball stuff.
Yeah, well, it was a shift, you know, and maybe it was needed or a breather, and there were some wonderful shows, but kind of about nothing, like Seinfeld and stuff, you know. I mean, there was a shift, but it was like, it wasn't, you know, I don't think they really understood the Zappas either. I don't think they understood what Moon and Dweezil were looking to do, and what, you know, they kind of thought Dweezil was another Kurt Cameron, and Moon was along for the ride, you know. So, but for me, it was like, why did I think I needed to go back to television? You know, I mean, who am I? What is it about? And then it was like, well, but still, I've got all these tapes, which, you know, they mean even more now that it's 10 years, past 1990 from 1980. You know, it's actually, a lot of stuff is clearer now, and there's a story here that wants to get told, and that kind of got me into you know, what was going on with the internet. I connected, the first browser was, there were some college students back in Illinois who created something they called Mosaic, right. And that became the Netscape browser. So, you know, in that and just seeing the possibilities that people could circle up and share with each other in a different way than most decisions were being made, and the sectors were divided, you know, kind of their own silos, and then those silos were all these kind of straws of organizational up down. You know, we were just not, didn't know how to have a conversation about relationship.
Well, I'm sure you would find an audience if you you decided to do a documentary or even a podcast telling the whole story.
What I'd like to do, and I'm working with some the Indian people who have, you know, back in those days, it was like Indian people say, they should make more movies like this, you know, and I'd say, no, actually, you guys got to make them.
Yep.
Right.
Because they don't know, they don't understand. They just think Indians can't act or something, you know, but you have this great storytelling and profound, you know, so, and that's happening now, but the idea is to get, it's about half of it is digitized and make it available on a kind of open source way, you know, for people, put out a little bit at a time, invite people. I'm still in touch. That's one great thing about Facebook and some of these other connectors, but with people in Indian country, people that I, you know, and, it, you know, when you say that, then it gets beyond the border that divides North America and cuts off Mexico and all, you know, and then you get into that sense that we're all indigenous to the earth, but we have kind of these organizational mindsets that kind of rule those people off as something that is dying out, you know, whereas it actually is resurrecting, or maybe that's a bad word. Limited, you know, it's got, you know, but certainly in reverse. And so, and just facilitate those conversations and make it available as material, because there are a lot of young Indian people that don't remember these things that went on when, you know, it was 1977, the Native American Freedom of Religion Act. And it was now legal for Native Americans to practice their religion, because before that they were made, no, you can't do a sun dance, you can't have a sweat lodge, you can't, right. You know, so, you know, that, and so, so I can't, so I came, for me, it started with, is it all right to keep going? I'm really enjoying having this conversation with you.
Absolutely.
It started with, you know, well, what could I do? When I say we got the computer out on the AOL in the house, I'm seeing, wow, this is a lot of great potential here, but people have to have access to it.
Radio Labyrinth is sponsored by Atlanta Pizza in Mural, 1565 Georgia 138 in beautiful Conyers, Georgia. Atlanta Pizza in Mural is a longtime local favorite, serving the best pizzas, gyros, Italian beef sandwiches, hot subs, spaghetti, lasagna, and Greek salads in a relaxed, casual setting since 1983.
Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/ATL Pizza. Interact with other diners, check out the menu, and even start your order. Or AtlantaPizzaEuro.com.
Hey guys, here's another one of Radio Labyrinth's awesome sponsors, Bailey Tree Care LLC in Gainesville, Georgia. You can contact Nick Bailey at 770-530-9421 or Jason Chapel at 404-234-2599. Bailey Tree Care. They are Northeast Georgia's premier choice for high-quality tree care services at affordable prices. Their tree care experts bring an excellent safety record and over 10 years of experience in the industry. Bailey Tree Care specializes in residential products and offers free estimates for all your tree service needs. Residential tree care, certified arborists and tree climber, tree trimming and pruning, tree removal, stump grinding and removal, shrub trimming, pruning, underbrush clearing, and mulch and firewood sale. Safety, professionalism, and affordability. Call them today to discuss your tree care need. That's Bailey Tree Care LLC.
But what if there was a TV show that was partly place-based television comedy like Barney Miller or Cheers or something, but it was also kind of like a multi-genre like Sesame Street, you know, where you can have Dizzy Gillespie talking about music, and then suddenly Big Bird comes and say, Dizzy, come with us, Cookie Monster fell in, you know, and then you can cut to the number two, and you know, And at that point, America's Funniest Home Videos was now a big TV show. There were people submitting their videos, and they say, what if it didn't have those cheesy parameters of watching Aunt Lucy's skirt blow up, or Uncle Walt falling off the dock? But
some kid getting
the
hurt.
Stories that people are wanting to tell in their communities, and people are getting access to these tools. And I started connecting with, you know, so that you could, and it would have an element of like Saturday Night Live, in that a big name could participate in an episode. And they wouldn't be taking a risk unless they weren't willing to take a risk.
Right.
You know, that was, you know, play it too careful. But it wouldn't be the same as like doing a television pilot, which has a whole lot of other things that have to be considered. And I asked friends that, you know, if they would be lifeguards in the talent pool, kind of play that role. And it, there's nobody I asked that, that said anything other than, yeah, you know, Eddie Olmos and Bonnie Raitt. And, you know, you're kind of the usual suspects in many ways, you know, but but it was just so far from what was something the networks, you know, they were mostly resisting the internet. You know, and then they jumped out and bought up all the old search engine companies that the people in the know knew weren't going to be any good anymore because they were too easy to game, and Google had shown up with a whole other way of doing search, you know. And so then the networks got stung from that, and then they, you know, it took them a while to get around to like, okay, we're going to have to do something here. And but I did learn that, you know, there's a lot of ways that, you know, we just don't have a way to circle up and share what's in our lap. So I called those places local access places because I love that word, a lap, you know, our domain of care, charge, control, and responsibility, and storytelling place and stuff. And I, you know, that was kind of where I was going with things. It didn't help when Bush got elected or whatever happened there, because all the programs that they were developing, block building and community policing, and the Labor Department had their one-stop initiative. There are all these things that were like, laps could be all of these, you know.
Which Bush are you talking about, Max Gale?
I like the first one.
Yeah, oh, all right, my dad.
All of those were. I'm sorry. No, I mean the second.
Oh, you're talking about me? All right. Hey, I love Barney Miller. All right, I'll shut up now.
Yeah. No. You know. I mean, all I'm saying is that in the flow of people finding a way to find more where they're connected than where they're not.
Yep.
I think that's always been what community is, you know, and it happens in, you know, people who disagree about everything, but if there's a car crash, or there's something, or there's a child in danger or something, they'll come together and work to take care of that. You know, we have that in us. And it just seemed to me that if we could have more of it, you know, modeled and facilitated of coming together where it's not a debate and you're on this side or that side or something, but have a conversation with a center rather than sides, you know. So
I have to think about that.
That's still my through line, you know, but, you know.
Well, no, you're right. And I think about that a lot, because we are a community, and we are more divided now than I think we've been in our entire lives. We have more opportunity to form new communities and more places to meet and share ideas. But we, because of what you said earlier of, you know, the people gobbling up everything, now people on Twitter are either one thing or the other, or this and that and that. And it's so much better back in the 2000s and the late 90s when you had a forum and we weren't talking politics. We were talking about things that we cared about, the earth and culture and music and things like that. So that's my point. That's what I'm saying. So I see what you're saying quite well, I think.
Well, and it seems like a lot of that is driven by the things that are like, how do you get people to engage more, you know, and get more clear about their profiles to advertise to them.
Yeah, if you figure it out, let us know.
Yeah, they want people fighting.
I just think that in the openness and newness of podcasts, where some of that is so blatantly going on that you know you just skip away from it.
Well, I could tell you if you just start talking about people being murdered, you'll get all of the advertisers.
Yes.
Because all the true crime podcasts, that's who gets all the advertisers.
That's a strange thing, isn't it?
Yes. And one more point you were talking about in the 70s, you know, and encouraging the Indian community to make their own stuff. It was not a very long leap from F Troop to Little Big Man. So if you're a kid at that time, you're seeing Indians all played by white guys in Hollywood. And then all of a sudden you have this movie that comes along with Dustin Hoffman, who is a white guy raised by Indians. But the point was, that was such a great movie, and it showed the insanity of like Custer and how the troops treated the natives out west.
Mm-hmm. And Chief Dan George was a conscious, intelligent, smart, actual, real Indian, bringing all of that to the part.
It's a good day to die.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him. I loved him in anything he was in. He was such a good actor.
Yeah.
And he won an Oscar for that, but he didn't accept it, or was he nominated? I don't remember.
I don't know that he. I don't know. I mean that you're. I think more thinking of Brando turning down the. The Oscar for The Godfather, you might think. I don't think he might have been nominated. I don't know that. I feel very confident that he didn't win and turn it down, because I'm sure I would know that. And I don't think that was his style, you know.
Whatever you decide to do, whether it be a podcast or a book or a documentary, please come back and promote it on our show.
Yeah.
If you decide to do something.
I'm going to try to hit you guys up for a little mentoring.
Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, I can tell you a podcast you might be into is it's called Thunder Bay, and it's about what happens to all the indigenous people in Thunder Bay, Canada, and it's pretty tripped out. It's a really good detailed account of how so many of them end up thrown into the river there. And I had no idea, because it's like you always think of Canada, these kind people of the north. And it's not so great for the indigenous people there. You might find that podcast pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of it. And a lot of those people I've connected with, you know, a lot on Facebook, just people passing, you know, just stuff around. And there's some things coming to ahead the whole Northwest, and I think these are really important things in our times, you know. But I get a good vibe from you guys.
Well, good.
No, I do. You know, and so I would love to circle back when I get a little further down the road. And what's your take on that platform and how you're working there, and how does that how you're doing it this way? So.
Well, I've been on a radio show in Atlanta for quite a while, different ones, but I've been in the market. So that was definitely a boost as far as getting listeners. But what we talk about isn't polarizing. And I find that this is the most liberating platform that I've ever been a part of, that we can say what we want and we can talk about what we want and we can reach an audience, and you can be niche or you can be broad. And 1 week you're this and 1 week you're that. That's why we call it Radio Labyrinth, because 1 week we'll do an interview, the next week we'll talk about 100 different things.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love that name, Labyrinth. It, you know, gives you a whole lot of spiritual realm to play in.
Yep.
Oh, put in a good word for us with Hal if you talk to him. We'd love to chat with him, what with it being the 45th anniversary this year, and just this past, the January 23rd was the actual 45th anniversary of the premiere of Barney Miller.
So. Yeah, I screwed up. They sent out, it kind of came through one of my old agents, and it seemed like so far down the road that I parked it, but it was an invitation to fly back to New York and do a day of shooting, just hosting pieces for the 45 show,
right.
45th anniversary celebration there. And I think, I know, I just came across it like a couple of days ago. I went, oh, that would have been fun. You know, so, yes, can I share one of my, I call them rhymes, because
please do.
I really want to get into art, you know, but anyway, just cause this is, you know, it's pretty much, I call them my breadcrumbs in the cosmic forest, but it's more, you know, I'll go with, bigger than you. And that can be the you, that's because the next line is bigger than me, you know, but there's There's also that you that people get hung up on, who's the you you're praying to? Or, you know what I mean?
Right.
That you, bigger than me, bigger than all our hearts and minds can see, bigger than all we believe there to be, bigger than bondage, bigger than free, bigger than love, bigger than hate, bigger than destiny, bigger than fate, bigger than humble, bigger than great, bigger than race or religion or state, bigger than teacher or guru or sage, bigger than sex or youth or age, bigger than anger, resentment, or rage, bigger than anything said on a page or a stage, bigger than action, whatever we try, bigger than all we accept or deny, bigger than anyone, what, who, or why, bigger than bigger, and bigger than I.
Wow.
That was
thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Really beautiful.
That's awesome.
It got to me.
If you ever get back to Atlanta, we'd love to have you in the studio.
And anytime you want to come on, let Jeff know.
Yeah.
I will. I've really enjoyed this, and I'd love to keep the conversation going.
Thank you very much.
All right. Very cool. So much.
Enjoy your weekend.
So great to meet you.
Thank you, Max.